Welcome to the Think Data podcast, brought to you in partnership with Dataworks. If you want to stay up to date with the latest breakthroughs and trends in the world of data and artificial intelligence, and if you're curious about some of the strategies that companies and founders use to launch data and AI products, then you're in the right place. Our aim is to bring together a diverse lineup of fantastic guests, from the founders through to accomplished leaders and product owners at some of the most fascinating data and AI companies worldwide. They will each offer you their own unique insight into what it takes to launch and scale a great data business. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Think Data podcast in partnership with Dataworks. On today's show, I welcome Krishnan to the show. Krishnan is currently AWS. He advises enterprise companies on how to implement the best possible AWS solution for their organization. He has a really interesting background because he's a fully fledged multi-company founder, and he joined AWS after several years launching and building these organizations within the artificial intelligence, drones, and edge processing space. And obviously, we were good enough to be introduced through mutual contact. So I appreciate you you coming on today. And as I mentioned, you're obviously working at AWS, but you know, prior to that, a number of years you worked for big tech. You then had a really long sprint and a very successful run at launching and exiting some companies. Would you mind kind of bringing everyone who's listening up to speed on your background? Because it is quite unique, you know, that kind of big tech, fully fledged founder, then big tech again. So yeah, over to you.
Yeah, sure, Alex. Thank you so much, first of all, for having me on the show. It's been a privilege. I've listened to some of your episodes in the past, and I do thank our common contact for introducing us. Prior to AWS, I've been in startups for about a decade. Even before startups, my first foray into building products was when I had P&L responsibilities at Sabre. I've been in product development engineering for a long time, but in that experience is when I realized that building products is not just about technology, it's about go-to-market, it's about customer value, it's about personas that use the product. But in the last 10 years, I have built our products, I've taken them to market, I have helped with pricing, packaging, go-to-market. And with AI, my first foray was in 2019 when I joined PrecisionHawk, when the concept of AI and computer vision were just beginning, right? So, and that was exciting times. And compare that to now, man, there's so many new technologies, new ways to do things. This is just a fascinating time to be in right now.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Obviously, you kind of been there, done it, got the t-shirt, and still live to fight another day. And I think it's interesting because over the last kind of 2.5-3 years, we've seen a real explosion. And whilst machine learning is not really that new, is everything back to kind of image detection, computer vision back in like NASA days, it's relatively older technology. But what we've seen is it becoming more accessible to everyone, and certainly to the customers like yourself and me. But what I was really interested to touch on, how would you describe the current state of AI from a startup standpoint? Because I think for people listening here, there's a lot of organizations and startups flooding onto the market. You know, money's beginning to free up a little bit, so exponential growth is happening everywhere. But how would you sum up the current state of this space?
Yeah, it's an incredible time to be in technology right now. As a founder, as a user, as someone who is implementing products as such, in the last 5 years that I've been in this business, I've noticed that ideas that took months, years to crystallize, build, now you can do it in a matter of days and weeks, right? And what that, in my personal opinion here is that it's taken the go-to-market activity to be much faster than what it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And that has allowed startups and like founders to build their ideas and create these incredible companies to test the market. and try to solve individual problems. So that's number one. Number two is accessing data and massaging data, collecting data, transforming it used to take a lot of time. And with AI and the horsepower, the computing horsepower that's there, different models that's available, it's a lot easier and a lot cost. It's a lot easier to just bring in and integrate these models into your workflow of how you build applications, right? Cost is going down for how you process. Cost of building and using models is going down. And it's just creating this incredible set of companies from a startup standpoint. On the business side, I've noticed that last year and the year before when Gen AI came into being, it exploded the ability to look at what is possible, right? So a lot of enterprises did not know what to do. They experimented with a lot of AI, Gen AI in the last 2 years. Now they're ready to actually implement it, bring it into the enterprise, invest in resources, invest in upskilling people, redoing their business in a way that ultimately helps the consumer or ultimately helps the people who use their product. So, and there's a lot of investment being made. Small startups have a lot to offer. Large companies have a lot to deliver to their customers. And it's that space where we got to figure out how enterprises and small companies or small startups find that sweet spot where they can help each other.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think last year, 95% of Fortune 500 companies referenced AI on their kind of earnings calls. And which is interesting because everyone trying to get there, but obviously you had the CPU costs, you had just the general cost of spinning up an AI or AI capability is pretty wild. And actually now you have with OpenAI and obviously these startups who are, whether they're building their own models or they're kind of hopping on the back of open source, it's interesting. I think in your experience then, obviously you've launched and grown companies, what do you think makes a standout startup with an AI right now? You touched on something interesting where it's they're looking at the use cases, they're looking at, they can almost test the market from a PMF standpoint, they can see if things are ready to be executed and sold into. But if you're looking at, say, 100 AI startups, what would you be looking at in terms of standouts?
So my position on how to build a company, how to build a product, has changed, has kind of evolved in the last 10 years. And the last 2 years, my personal point of view on this is that even before you build a product, you've got to start figuring out what the problem is. I'm not saying anything that people already don't know, right? Figure out a problem area that you want to go after, figure out the persona that's kind of using it. And then people just go build it and then, you know, they just figure it out from there. They change, they get feedback, and they just roll with it and just evolve. But my personal point of view is that while you're figuring out the primary use case, you've got to start thinking in terms of how the end user of your product is going to use it. What value are they going to get? What in terms of efficiencies, in terms of revenue, in terms of cost reductions, how are you going to price the product? Because those things need to be built into how the product is designed and built and deployed. If you're at that point where you build a product, you give it up for free, and then you figure out what your pricing is, and then you figure out what your product market fit is, you will be successful eventually, but it will take you a lot longer to do that, right?
Yeah.
So while I started in product, my experience in running companies, having influence on go-to-market, sales, marketing, pricing, packaging, leads me to strongly believe that a chief technology officer or a chief product officer has to understand who the sales is selling to, who marketing is marketing it to. They need to understand the entire funnel of who comes in and interacts with their product, because that ends up building the user experience. That ends up defining the user experience. That ends up defining the customer onboarding experience as you build the product. It's no longer the core functionality. You've got to take a broad view.
Yeah, it's really interesting actually to a CTO piece where they've got to really understand ultimately their end customer. But obviously my day job is building sales, go-to-market and technical teams for startups. And actually the main reason people tend to leave organizations is because the product market fit isn't clearly defined. They've got poor go-to-market, the sales strategies all over the place. Why is that, do you think? Why are founders, CTOs or whoever, whatever the job title is, why are they getting it so wrong?
I wouldn't say they're getting it wrong. Listen, you know, if you've been in startups, you know that you're running at a really fast pace.
Yeah.
You're taking a lot of information. You're trying to deliver value to your customers. So when you bring in experts into the mix to run individual divisions or organizations, be it sales or marketing, I personally believe most of the founders are beginning from a place of trust, right? So they bring in people and they trust them. They're trusting them with the job they need to do. And that's where the conversation starts, right? Now, what ends up happening is that I've seen instances where there's a different point of view for go-to-market for the leader who's running it. There's a different point of view for the salesperson who's running the sales show. The CTO and the CPO has a different point of view. And that's when the conversations need to happen. Even before you say, hey, bring on sales, let's just figure out a pipeline. Let's run some go-to-market sales motion, then build a pipeline of customers and go talk to. My recommendation is take a month or two, sit down, talk to each other, create that ideal customer profile, figure out how your CRM systems work, how your funnel works. Are your marketing messages good? Are they reflected in your product roadmap? Are they reflected in the value statements that your product, that you're building the product for? Don't jump in right away and build a go-to-market motion. Spend at least a month or two making sure you're all on the same page. And if you're not, you have enough time to tweak it. But if you just run and then 6 months later you figure out that everybody's talking about different things, it is too late.
Yeah, it's interesting. And this will ebb and flow, won't it? Because obviously when you launch a business, it's you generally believe there's a problem that needs solving. There's obviously customers that are going to want to part with money. But someone else on the podcast said actually, unless people are willing to pay for it, you know, then obviously it's not a commercially savvy idea to try and push a product into someone, because ultimately they've got to part with money, whether it's on an ARR basis or an upfront basis. I know you advised organizations and you obviously work quite heavy in that kind of PE and venture capitalist space. And I know if you look at kind of the news from Wiz, what that got announced this week, you know, huge, I think 38 billion with Google.
Yeah, 32, 38. Something
like that. I think a lot of these organizations, they have aspirations to have that acquisition. That's obviously the dream. But there's so many companies who are on the similar journey who are then touting these VCs, whether it's a big investment or it is an exit. In your experience advising these companies, what are the key factors they look at when identifying an investment opportunity, but also potentially a purchase?
Yeah. So the first thing I tell the, at least the people that I've spoken to, the PE firms in the past, the first thing I tell them is don't look at product features. Don't look at functionalities. Even if you're evaluating multiple companies, which one to acquire, which one to invest in, don't go by feature functionality. Because that just keeps up. Now, each company every 6 months when they upstage the other company, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a battle you want to fight. Rather focus on, does the company understand what problem they're solving and what's the ultimate value the customer gets?
Okay.
If that company and the leadership and the product and the sales and go to market guys, if they understand that, then you can build motions around it, right? That core needs to be really strong first. And then you figure out what you need to do, where you need to invest in. Ultimately, PE companies are looking to streamline operations of a company. They may cut some costs. They may invest in areas of growth. They definitely want strong management to run and execute the company. But ultimately, they're looking for four things, right? Is the company strategic in nature? Are they going to be there 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now? Because the PE return philosophy is very different than a VC return philosophy, right?
Yeah.
Number two is the scalability of the company and the offerings that they have. Depending on what philosophy that PE company has, they want to expand market within the US, or they may want to expand the market geographically in Europe or Asia. So does the operational structure of the company allow them to scale that? Because when they invest in, they already have a hypothesis of the company they're investing in and how they want to grow. So the companies need to match that hypothesis. That's number two. Number three is profitability doesn't hurt, of course, because the returns are much better when the company is profitable. At the same time, are they can they invest in growth areas? It's like if you have a cash cow coming in that helps you bring in gobs of money to fund the other innovation areas, that's how personally I would look at a business. Right?
Okay.
Is that money coming in? Does that allow me to take some risks? Even if those risks don't pan out, at least that stream of revenue and the stream of operations that is running the company, does it minimize the risk? If it minimizes the risk and you have potential to invest, it actually is much more rewarding for a PE to explore those ideas. Right? Mm-hmm. And the last thing I would say is the differentiation. In terms of product, in terms of functionality, in terms of value to customers. So those are the kind of three or four areas I think PE companies look for when they acquire or they invest in companies.
Interesting. I know I touched on it, they all have the same goal to be acquired or realize some generational kind of wealth with an acquisition or an investment. Mm. We touched on go-to-market, which is obviously one of the main reasons these organizations typically fall flat. They either struggle to get the customers or they're still working it out on the fly. But behind go-to-market and kind of the sales piece, what would you say some of the top challenges organizations or startups face when building out Gen AI solutions? Because obviously, you touched on it earlier, cost was a big thing. I know that's coming down now. Talent's another thing. You know, everyone's trying to still tap up the same talent. And also when you've got big tech, they typically will pay well over the odds to secure the top talent. So before they're taking a product to market and selling, what are typically some of the problems you see with startups in Gen AI specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to comment on top talent, where they reside. I think every company that's investing in Gen AI wants the best resource, be it a big company, small company. So let's keep that aside. I think what's happening in the market is everybody wants to invest in Gen AI because you don't need to convince people anymore that you need to invest in. What you do need to convince people is what's the value you will get, what's the return you will get. If you're streamlining operations for a retail company using some Gen AI solution, what does that mean in terms of value to customer? Is the customer experience from our shopping journey improving, from a return, like fulfillment getting better, returns of things you buy online, are those things getting better? So large companies still want to solve for that. Those problems are not going anywhere, right? So that's where they want to invest in. Startups, on the other hand, and I'm being there, so this personally, I can speak from a personal experience, we all believe ours is the best product,
right? Yeah.
We all believe that we're building something to change the world, and for this reason or that reason, they should use our product. But we have to find our way in our end customer's ecosystem. How does our product fit into how they want to use the product? If I build a data company, right? And I build this fantastic product that collects data from multiple places, analyzes it, does wonderful things, gives you the flexibility to apply any model that you want, open source or proprietary, to deliver value. That's all great.
Mm.
But how does the end user use it? Do they need to come to your platform to use it, or do you reside in their ecosystem so they use it, right? Because when you talk to large companies, security is a big thing. Reliability is a big thing. So while your product is fantastic, does that address those needs, right? So that's one. Yeah. The second aspect is, and large enterprises are traditionally taking longer to implement some of these products. They want to make sure that if they choose something, they choose it for the right reason, because they cannot afford to just mix and match once they implement it, rip and replace. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Right. So from a startup standpoint, I think they need to address that. They need to make it easy for large enterprises to feel like, oh yeah, this startup has this value proposition. And once I put it in, it gives me the flexibility to not only expand, but it also, for whatever reason, if I don't like it, I can replace it with something else or replace it with another feature. Not good news for the startup, but you earn trust with the customer if you say, listen, you use my product, we'll do everything to help you out. We'll do everything to implement it. If it doesn't work out, it's not going to cost you a lot. Right. Mm. So what are you doing to earn trust? And the price of development is going down. The barrier to entry is going down in how you're building products. What I built 5 years ago, I can probably build in a matter of weeks. So you set all that aside, because that would just keep going down. So ultimately, it comes down to, do you fit in the enterprise structure? Oh, a good, nice little thumbs up there. Do you fit inside the ecosystem of what the enterprise is trying to do? And do you ultimately deliver value to their customers?
Mm. Right?
But you have to deliver security and privacy and reliability. You cannot assume that the best product wins. You have to deliver that. Bring me a company that has long-term value, right?
Yeah.
So I've seen that not change. That has not changed in the last 20 odd years. Is companies want to invest in relationships, be it small with small companies or other companies, where you build on that relationships and have a long-term value. So if you map that into the day-to-day of how you evaluate small companies with better features and Gen AI solutions, I think that philosophy still holds.
Mm.
So ultimately, the value of what that Gen AI solution is today, we need to demonstrate, if I'm in a startup, to large companies, that I will be there for the long run. Even when I'm in a large company and I'm talking to another large company, we want to maintain long-term relationships. So
yeah,
that translates into the operations of the CIO or CTO. They understand that technology changes, but does my partner allow me to grow? Does that partner allow me to experiment? Does that partner allow me to implement things differently? And ultimately, will it help my business? Right.
Yeah, I think it's a really good answer.
Yeah, I mean, at the lower level, products will come and go. Features will come and go. Models will come and go. But the long-term viability of your partner is more important, in my point of view, because that's how you can change and build something brand new. Like a computer vision model for imaging for a healthcare company will change over time, but what workflows have you built around it? Does it help the patient? Does it help the doctor? Mm. Does it help the physician? Does it help the nurses? That sometimes is more important than the accuracy of a specific model. Is it secure? Is it HIPAA compliant?
Mm.
Right? These things sometimes are more important than, is that model better today than it was 3 months ago?
Yeah, it's a cracking answer. I think it also ties into your point earlier about what PE firms look for in the people, the companies they invest, is actually the ability to spin up new service lines, new features, new products. So I guess this all ties into this nicely, in the sense that if you are said health system who've been prospected by a really interesting Gen AI startup that's going to solve this problem, then you may be, it's important for you to probe on the additional, are they going to be a true partner? What additional features are coming back? Could this become that partner? And that's, you know, as those, that's exactly what I was asking really, was that there's like a dog chasing a parked car. There's so many new shiny tools, isn't there?
Right.
It's like, where do we draw the line here? And actually let's choose a trusted partner that's a really good team around them, great product, but can also have scope to bring us more.
Yeah. And also the flexibility that I as a company gives my customer, right? I mean, the freedom of choice, the flexibility to do multiple things, not tie them into a specific way. So if I'm a startup, I was actually talking to a founder 2 weeks ago, and they started up with one large language model, but now they're ensuring that they can support multiple large language models, because when they're talking with large enterprises, the large enterprises have already chosen which large language model they want to use.
Yeah.
Right? Those decisions are kind of happening right now. So if you're a startup and you say, I'm going to build this on only one foundational model, you're not going to be able to deliver value. You're actually leaving an X percent of the business away, because you're just tying yourself with one model. So you have to give the customer the flexibility and the freedom of choice of using any model they want, using any orchestration layer they want, use any database they want, use any integration points they want. So that they can try different things. Mm. They're not tied to just one model.
Yeah, interesting. My final question for you, which I always love asking, certainly somebody who's had the experience that you have, what does the next 12 months look like? I know kind of the acceleration from what, 2023, when OpenAI or ChatGPT became this kind of thing, and then all of a sudden we're now, things are going at such a rate that I don't know what's going to happen over the next 12 months. When in your experience, from the conversations you have and off your own network, what do you think the next 12 months looks like from a generative AI and a consolidation, maybe a startup standpoint?
I have heard that there's about $1 trillion, by some estimates, about $1 trillion waiting to be deployed.
Wow.
For technology, and that includes VC and that includes team.
Yeah. Right?
So you can now just extrapolate and say, okay, how much of that is going to go into organic investments, and how much of that is going to go into inorganic investments, right? So that's one. Number two is, I feel that a lot of these startups that are coming up, they're trying to solve a lot of these problems, but they're becoming specialized problems. I know we've used the word agentic AI and everything else, but if you take that concept into individual startups example, right? Even in a medical company, if one, let's a hospital system, if a startup is offering an imaging software, another model, another company is offering patient care software, another company is offering healthcare management software, the healthcare company is going to look at consolidating all these things to create a really good enterprise-wide solutions for the patients, the doctors, the government entities, the state entities, the regulatory entities, right? So the same concept, I feel, applies for startups as well. There will be consolidation. Some will have grow exponentially. Some of these companies out there are generational companies, right? But ultimately, the success of these companies into being acquired or growth depends on the data they have access to. It's about the proprietary data that they have access to. You know, there's only so much data available in the world that can be recreated. So if you're a startup and you're trying to build your company, get as much data as possible that is proprietary. Build your models on that, build your system on that, and then see who are the users of these proprietary models or proprietary data, where do they fit in, and then try to align themselves with specific partnerships or specific companies, and then grow it from that standpoint. Right? So bottoms up, you've got to align yourself. top down, there will be acquisitions, there will be exponential growth. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, the headline figure there, which I'm sure everyone will take away, is kind of one of the last things you finish is $1 trillion waiting deployed. And that does actually resonate with a few conversations I have with VC partners of ours, that there's so much capital to be deployed, but the issue they've got is finding investable companies. So actually that's going to be really interesting to see which ones are being invested in and why. And obviously Wiz is a good example of an organization that's got a great product, good team, and that they were acquired. And and I'm really fascinated. Krishna, I really enjoyed that. And thanks for your insight. I think anyone listening here that's curious about the AI space and startups and how they scale and some of the limitations, I think they've you've given a really good account. So I really appreciate you coming on this morning. And thanks so much. It's been my pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Alex. And thanks again for having me. It has been a wonderful conversation. And look forward to having more.
Good man. Appreciate it.
All right.